7. The chapter is entitled Indra Offends Brihaspati. And today's verse is text number 32. It has a very short purport, so I'd also like to read text 33 and the purport. So this verse reads, please repeat it after me, line by line.
Vrinimahetvopadhyayam
Brahmishtam Brahmanam Gurum
Yatanjasa Vijeshyama Sapatnang Stavati Jasa Vrini Mahetvo Padhyayam Brahmishtam Brahmanam Gurum
Yatanjasa
Vijeshyama Sopatnang stavati jasa Brini mahetvo padhyayam Brahmishtang brahmanang gurum Yatanjasa vijishyama Sopatnang stavati jasa Brahmishtam Brahmanam Guru Anjasa Vichishyama Svapatnam Stavati Jasa.
We choose Tava, you
Upadhyayam
as teacher and spiritual master.
Brahmishtam,
being perfectly aware of the Supreme Brahman.
Brahmanam,
a qualified Brahman.
Guru,
the perfect spiritual master.
Yata,
so that.
Anjasa,
very easily.
Vijeshyama,
we shall defeat.
Sapatnan,
our rivals.
Tava,
your.
Tejasa,
by the power of austerity. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Since you are completely aware of the Supreme Brahman, you are a perfect Brahmana, and therefore you are the spiritual master of all orders of life. We accept you as our spiritual master and director, so that by the power of your austerity, we may easily defeat the enemies who have conquered us. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. One must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. Therefore, although Vishwarup was inferior to the demigods accepted him as their guru to conquer the demons. As I said, I'd like to go on to the next verse, text 33, which reads, Nagarhayanti hi arteshu yavishtangri abhivadanam chandobhyo anyatra na brahman vayo jaishtyasya karanam. And this means, the demigods continue, do not fear criticism for being younger than us. Such etiquette does not apply in regard to Vedic mantras. Except in relationship to Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age, but one may offer respectful obeisances even to a younger person who is advanced in chanting Vedic mantras. Therefore, although you are junior in relationship to us, you may become our priest without hesitation. Purport. It is said, Vridhatvam vayasa vina, one may be senior without being advanced in age. Even if one is not old, one gains seniority if he is senior in knowledge. Vishwarup was junior in relationship to the demigods because he was their nephew, but the demigods wanted to accept him as their priest, and therefore he would have to accept obeisances from them. The demigods explained that this should not be a cause for hesitation. He could become their priest because he was advanced in Vedic knowledge. Similarly, Chanakya Pandit advises, Nichadapi uttamam jnanam One may accept education from a member of the lower social order. The brahmanas, the members of the most elevated varna, are teachers. But a person in a lower family, such as a family of kshatriyas, vaishyas, or even shudras, may be accepted as a teacher if he has knowledge. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of this when he expressed his opinion before Sri Ramananda Roy, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 8.128, Kibabi Prakibanyasi, Shudra Kene Naya, Ye Krishna Tattva Beta, Se Guru Hoya. It does not matter whether one is a Brahmana, Shudra, Grihastha, or Sannyasi. These are all material designations. A spiritually advanced person has nothing to do with such designations. Therefore, if one is advanced in the society, in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his position in human society, he may become a spiritual master. Mukam karoti vachalam bhangam langayate garim yat kripa tadham bande shri gurun dinatadanam. So whether he is young or old, or sannyasi, brahmana, shudra, or even perhaps less than shudra, by social caste and considerations, if he is a guru, then his instruction is needed to fulfill the human purpose. Here the demigods, they urgently need help to withstand pandemonium. Srila Prabhupada, in a conversation once, nicely explained this word pandemonium by breaking it up into its roots. Pan means everywhere, like the theory of pantheism says God is everywhere. And demonium, demons are everywhere. So Srila Prabhupada has said the modern misleaders, those who are unqualified and yet who occupy the leadership posts in society, they have created a pandemonium. They have allowed human society to become overrun by demons. So in universal management, the devas, the demigods, as it is said, Vishnu Bhakti Smritodai, the demigods are all devotees of Vishnu. And they are entrusted with the task, the great task, of maintaining universal order. And that means primarily to prevent pandemonium, to prevent the demoniac influence from becoming prominent. Of course, the demons, they have their place reserved for them. Krishna has created this cosmos, this material world, in such a way that there are so many desires and so many living entities. So these desires are fulfilled in the universal management. So in the lower planets, lower Bilashvarga planetary systems, there's a place for the demons to live. But due to some long-standing enmity, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, the demons are very ambitious to break out of their, what they consider their social stratification, their limited opportunity, and make their way to the heavenly planets, even if it is by force, and wrest the thrones of the demigods from them, and rule the entire universe. They're very convinced that they are more qualified than the demigods to rule. They're very convinced that they know how to make this universe into a really nice place. Their consideration is that this material existence is meant for sense gratification. So why should there be so many restraints and restrictions put upon the living entities in the name of dharma, in the name of tapasya, in the name of spiritual elevation? Who cares about that? Doesn't matter. So this is the demoniac attitude. So they have their arguments, why they are, their philosophy, why they are pushing to change the order of things in the world, in the universe. They may put forward, sometimes they will put forward arguments that it is to redress some social injustice. The demons think they're being discriminated against by the demigods, so we have to set things right. Or perhaps it is to make a social experiment. Why should the demigods always rule? Why them? Why not us? We're also highly qualified. Actually, we come from the same family. Some of us demons are more powerful than demigods. Some of us have more knowledge. So why can't we rule? And so on and so forth. They will put forward their arguments. But the fact is that the demigods are qualified because they are appointed to those posts by Lord Vishnu himself. It is Lord Vishnu who has given the plan for this universe, the purpose, not some puffed up upstarts. So the devas, they are in agreement with the plan of the Lord. And so therefore, they are given these posts by the Lord. The demigods may be powerful in so many material ways, but they do not have that basic qualification of being submissive to the rule of order given by Krishna. So this brings up an interesting point, that in Western society, we see that there is very prominent a philosophy of which is often called upward mobility, become very prominent in modern times, where persons who were for so long considered to be of a lower social status, now they want to assert themselves by rising to higher positions. So this ideal, it's a Western ideal, which actually arises, since Prithu Prabhu is here giving some insight into Christianity, this also comes from that, a sort of perversion of the teachings of Christianity. Christianity spread among the lower castes largely upon the appeal of the idea of resurrection, that the body dies, is buried, but when Jesus comes back, the dead body will be made whole and will rise again. And moreover, those who are faithful Christians will inherit the earth. And they will be able to see those who oppress them, the rascal leaders, the higher classes. They will be able to see them banished into hell. I have seen in monasteries in Eastern Europe, for instance, there's a famous monastery in Romania called Voronet, where all of this is depicted in frescoes on the side of the church. And you see the graves opening and the pious, faithful Christians who endured so much suffering in their life, they're coming out with whole bodies again. And then you see the opulently clad, what are known as boyars. Boyars means noblemen. Noblemen who are hypocrites, who are not true Christians, who oppressed the poor, who enjoyed this world by breaking the laws of God. So they are being consigned to the flames of hell. And they're very astonished. What? Us? We're going to hell? They're being pushed there by so many horrible-looking little devils. And the poor, oppressed masses are joining the saints who have come down from heaven to take them back through the pearly gates. So this is had a very strong popular appeal. And in this way, Christian preachers could go forth among the masses and spread Christianity. And this resurrection philosophy, of course, was focused on the day Jesus will return. That's very interesting about Christian history, that at first they said Jesus will come back 100 years after his leaving, 100 AD. So they were anxiously awaiting, but when that year came and went, Jesus did not come. So then they added another zero. Hare Krishna. They said, they said he'll return in the year 1000. And still he did not return. And it was after that time that Europe, which was in what is still known as the Dark Ages, an age when everyone was very much accepting the rigid authority of the church, not expecting much from this life, Then, after the year 1000, people began to think, well, what about this life? We're waiting, waiting, waiting. When is it going to happen? We're waiting to inherit the earth. So then there was a scramble in the church. The Pope, one Pope Urban II, he declared the reason Jesus hasn't come back. He said this in the year 1092, I think, or 94, something like that. Anyway, sometime after that appointed date when Jesus would come back. He said the reason Christ didn't return is because the Muslims have conquered Jerusalem. Jesus will descend in Jerusalem, but how can he? Because the infidels are there. So that was the cause of the Crusades, seven Crusades. It was a big social movement, big social upheaval, especially the lower classes. They wanted to get their right. So they were marching, they were following these sort of scruffy-looking prophets who would come out and say, the kingdom of God is at hand. We just have to defeat the Muslims in Jerusalem, and Jesus will come down and give us the earth and set everything's right, everything right. So there were many mass migrations of poor persons from European villages to Jerusalem. On the way, most of them were slaughtered by the Turks. So anyway, these crusades came and went, and still nothing happened. Jerusalem was conquered so many times. Still nothing happened. Still the promised day did not come. So gradually, although the ideal remained, the religious element waned because they were disappointed. Where's Jesus? He hasn't come yet. Maybe he's not coming. So historians say this ideal became transformed into what we now know, Hare Krishna, what we now know as humanism, in which humanity became focused not on God, but on themselves. And so, Hare Krishna. And so, we see in European history the rise of various social, political philosophies, concepts, which are aimed at setting things right in the world, at rectifying injustices, at making the world peaceful and happy, in, you know, the ideals of the lion laying down with the lamb, of everyone being equal and happy together. So this cause was taken up by humanists, by socialists, by communists, on and on and on. This is evolution of social movements in European history, down to this very day. I can recall myself when I was on the library party visiting one Catholic university in America. And so in the library party we used to search out the teachers, the professors, and sell them Prabhupada's books and get them to order books for their libraries. So I was looking in this Catholic university in which the staff was largely priests. So I was looking for some teachers to show Srila Prabhupada's books to. So I went into one office where I expected to find teachers. And lo and behold, I found all these scruffy-looking characters with long sideburns. They're wearing flowered shirts with puffy sleeves. This is back in the 70s. Bell-bottomed blue jeans, boots. And they were, you know, as they were coming and going, they were giving each other the power signal, right on. They were talking on the telephone, organizing marches, organizing all sorts of alternative social things. And I was surprised to find out that these were the priests of the university. And one of them told me, this was about 1974, he said, we're trying to bring back 1968 at this university. So this is what has become of religious principles in the Western society. It's become completely subverted by worldly considerations. And that is now called humanism. So this is a perversion of dharma, dharmasya glani. So this is not what is happening here. Here we see that Vishwarupa, who is socially inferior to the demigods is being appointed as their guru. But it's not the same thing. The stark difference is that this is a coming down from authority, coming down from Lord Brahma, who is the giver of Vedic knowledge. The demigods, being devotees of the Lord, they have not had a democratic parliament session and tried to work things out by consensus, by speculation, come up with a new program. What have they done? They have gone to Lord Brahma, the supreme authority of Vedic knowledge in the universe, and they have asked him, what shall we do? And he has said, you take Vishwarup, who may be your younger, but he is qualified to give you the knowledge you need to maintain your posts in this universe as demigods, to defeat the uprising of the demons. They're pandemonium. So, approaching the spiritual master, one does this, Srila Prabhupada says, quoting this, Tasmat Gurun Prapadyeta, Jignasya Shreya Uttamam. Shreya Uttamam. For one's supreme, supreme, higher benefit in life. The higher benefit in life is not to carve out a niche for oneself in this material world and proclaim oneself to be lord of something. That is also not the interest of the demigods. That is not why they approached Lord Brahma, simply because they are fearful for their nice, comfortable posts, but actually they have their dharma to fulfill. So Lord Brahma has appointed a spiritual master who, as explained in this verse, Brahmishtam Brahmanam Gurun, he's qualified to give knowledge of the absolute truth. He is situated. He is perfectly aware of the Supreme Brahman. He is a qualified Brahmana. He is a perfect spiritual master. These are appearing in the synonyms. So he is qualified to instruct you in your ultimate good, which is devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Spiritual master is meant for that. Spiritual master, if he is qualified, he may come from any social background, just like there is a very well-known story from Gaudiya Vaishnava history. We recently observed her appearance day, Ganga Mata Goswamini. So that's a very nice story. How she became so honored by being great Vaishnava, perfect Vaishnava, that Lord Jagannath ordered the king of Orissa and his ministers, and indeed the brahmanas who are engaged in the worship of Lord Jagannath, to accept Ganga Mata as their spiritual master. Even though, again, as here, by social consideration, she was their inferior. But the real point of the story is to show this, that Ganga Mata Goswamini became so qualified, so respectable, that even the king of Orissa accepted her as spiritual master by her unflinching adherence to the order of her spiritual master. That is the whole point of this history. That she had been sent by her Guru Maharaj from Vrindavan to preach in Orissa, and she stayed there following very strictly. And even though one holy day came where everyone was going up to Bengal, and her home place was Bengal, and they were going there to bathe in the Jamuna on this particular holy day, so there was much talk, let's go to Bengal, people were leaving, and she was left all alone. And she was thinking it would be nice to go there also and bathe in the Ganga. But she thought, but my Guru Maharaj did not give me such permission. So I will stay here and preach. So she continued on. And then the night before this holy day, this Varuni day, she had a dream in which her spiritual master told her that you just bathe in some local river called the Sveta Ganga, and it will be good, as good as bathing in the river Ganges. So with great happiness, the next evening, which is the time for taking that bath, she entered the waters of the Sveta Ganga, and there was a great wave, a great current which came up and swept her away. And she was wondering what is happening. And she was actually swept into the Jagannath temple. And there she saw that these waters that had captured her were flowing from the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. This was, of course, late at night. There was no one around to see this. And in these waters she saw all the demigods, she saw all the sages, all the great personalities from all the universe. They had come to bathe in these waters. And she also had the opportunity to bathe in those waters flowing from Lord Jagannath's lotus feet. So very happily she was bathing. And because everyone was chanting auspicious mantras, so that sound was reverberating inside the Jagannath Mandir. And the watchmen outside, they heard this roaring sound. So they became alarmed and they brought the priests. And the priests heard the sound and they fetched the king and his soldiers. So the king personally came. The doors were open. They came inside and all they found was this one Lady Vaishnava, Mataji, standing very humbly. So they arrested her. They were saying, we thought this was very strange that some woman sadhu would come here to preach. Now we see what she really wanted. She came here in the night to steal the jewels of Lord Jagannath, that's all. So they imprisoned her. But then that night, the king, the ministers, the Brahmins of the temple, they had a dream in which Lord Jagannath appeared and said, I'm very angry with you. You immediately release Ganga Mata and you accept her as guru. So because Lord Jagannath ordered it was done. So this is the main point of this pastime, is to illustrate Ganga Mata's strict adherence to order of guru. And because of this, she became glorified by the arrangement of Krishna. This is exactly the same thing that is happening here. Vishwarup is becoming spiritual master of the demigods. Because the demigods have turned to authority, asking for help, and authority, Lord Brahma has determined that here is the most qualified, so you accept him. So very, very willingly they're accepting Vishwarup. Whereas the humanists, whatever you want to call them, those whose attention is focused on this world, on enjoying this world, on controlling this world, and they have another agenda. And they may also turn to spiritual authority, but they want to extract from them the permission, benediction, for fulfilling their own agenda. Just as there's a story from the Upanishads, Chandogya Upanishad, to illustrate this. How Indra and Virochana is the son of Maharaj Bali, great king of the demons. So Indra and Virochana, they approached Lord Brahma to receive Brahma-gyan from him, knowledge of the self. So Lord Brahma, to test them, he first of all said, the self that you've come here to know about can be seen by anyone if they simply fill a dish with water and look in it. So Virochana was very happy to hear this. He said, in other words, he concluded, that this great knowledge that you have to give, the conclusion of it is that we are our bodies. Because when you look in a dish of water, you see the reflection of your body. That's wonderful. So Virochana was very satisfied, and he left Lord Brahma's abode and went back to the demons and said, I've got it. And they all accepted him as guru. He said, wonderful. This is wonderful. But Indra, because he's a demigod, he thought, wait a minute. This can't be right. And so he came back to Lord Brahma and he said, isn't there something more? And Brahma said, yes, I was just waiting to get rid of the other guy. Because he's not qualified to receive this knowledge. And then Lord Brahma instructed the real truth, that we are not the body, we are eternal spirit, soul, and servant of Sri Krishna. So even though the materialists, they may approach spiritual authority, they have their own agenda. And if they come to hear what the actual truth is, then they don't like it. Then they become disappointed. There's a story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used to tell to illustrate this very point about the humanist agenda or philanthropic agenda with regards to spiritual life. It's a story of swan and cranes. So there was a group of cranes, these birds with a long neck and long legs, long beak. And they inhabited a boggy marsh. So one day they happened to see a swan come by. They'd never seen a swan before. So the leader of the cranes asked the swan, you're a very strange bird. You have reddish eyes and a reddish beak and reddish feet. Well, where do you come from? I come from Lake Manasarovar. Oh, what is that place like? So then the swan explained, it is a beautiful lake of nectarian, crystal clear waters. And arrayed in these waters are islands made of jewels. And on these islands are growing very fabulous fruit trees, bearing wonderful fruits. And there are golden lotus flowers everywhere. And it is here that we swans live. And the cranes, they looked at each other very skeptically. They weren't very satisfied with this. So then the leader of the cranes, he asked, well, tell us one thing. Are there big fat snails in the Manasarovar Lake? And this swan answered, no, I'm sorry, we don't have such entities there. No big fat snails. So then all the cranes began to laugh. You come from such a place where there's no fat snails. Why, we would never go there. You see our nice boggy marsh? There are many fat snails here. We fill our belly here every day with them. And so we are very satisfied to remain here. So go your way, swan. Go back to your Manasarovar, wherever you come from. Be happy there. But we are staying here. We would never follow you there. So the moral of this story, as explained by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, is that the humanists, the philanthropists, and so on, they're very quick when they meet the transcendentalists to ask, so what is the social purpose of your mission? Are you going to places where there has been misfortune? And are you giving out free clothes? And are you giving education? And are you opening hospitals? And when they come to find that the genuine transcendentalist is not interested in such affairs, then they say, oh, then there's no use to your mission. We will not follow that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that these such person, they lack the capacity for real philosophical introspection. He says that there are three questions that are to be answered in life. And these are what, who, and how. And these three questions can only be answered by approaching bona fide spiritual master. So one has to have the intelligence, the brain power, to be able to ask these three questions. What means what are the real problems of life? What are the real problems? Is it social injustice? Is that a real problem of life? Inequality, inequity? Is it anything like that? No. The real problems of life are birth, old age, disease, death. So that question must be, first of all, answered properly. The second question is who? Who are suffering these real problems of life? Is it the poor? Is it the downtrodden? Is it the socially disenfranchised? No. It is everybody. Everybody is suffering equally. So then, why? Why are we suffering? Because we have this material body. Everyone. From Brahma down to the tiny ant. Everyone has this material body, everyone is suffering. So then how do we get out of this suffering condition? Well, that is the subject matter of the Vedic scriptures. So it's for this knowledge that we approach spiritual master, to answer these questions. Tasmat gurun prapadyeta jignyasya shreya uttama. This is the ultimate auspicity, ultimate benefit for all living entities, to have these questions answered. Not to try to utilize this knowledge for making material adjustments in this world to make an artificial solution to the problems of material existence. So, I'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes?
I believe it's mentioned in the papers, the second report, something about accepting a guru for a specific purpose. So, maybe you could explain that a little bit.
That was in the first purport. One must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. Yes, well, in Krishna consciousness, for instance, there are various duties. And so various devotees become expert. I think Rohini Nandan Prabhu was mentioning in his class yesterday how in our movement there are various devotees who are outstanding for their expertise in various areas. So that means guru, that means they're a teacher in these areas. So to become expert in that area, one should approach one who is expert. And sometimes it is seen that a disciple will be referred by his Diksha Guru, his initiating spiritual master, to another spiritual master, Shiksha Guru, to learn puja, or to learn cooking, or learn some other, Sankirtan, some other area of devotional service, because that spiritual master is most expert.
Speaking of upward mobility, can we say that the Vedic system of upward mobility is Varnashram? And if so, why is it that it's misunderstood as being oppressive?
Yes. Well, the real point of Varnashram is to surrender to Krishna. This is according to Bhagavad Gita. That's the real point. The real point is that we do our duty not with a view to upward mobility, upward social mobility, as we see in the Western world. One is thinking, I'll come in on the bottom, take some low post, but gradually work my way up, push out this guy on top of me, push out him, then come to the top. You know, just like in the United States, a movie actor who's considered in Vedic social terms Shudra, he can become President of the United States, and that is said to be the glory of the United States of America. But that is not the point of Varnashram Dharma. The point of Varnashram Dharma, as clearly explained, actually it's the whole point of Bhagavad Gita, that whatever your duty is, you do it for Krishna. Arjuna actually, he was proposing a type of upward social mobility, you might say, in the beginning, because he said, I want to give up my duty as a Kshatriya and become a mendicant, renounce, become a sannyasi. But, of course, his reasons for that were, as Krishna pointed out, they were all selfish, material reasons. So Krishna said, no, you are a Kshatriya, that is your nature, so follow your nature, but for me, surrender to me. So otherwise, Krishna says, anityam asukam lokam. It's an interesting point in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. That, what is that? Mamhi partivyapastriya yepisu papiyoni striya vaishyastata shudras. That verse where Krishna says that anyone, whether they come from Papa Yoni, sinful birth, there may be woman, Vaishya, or Shudra. If they surrender to me, then they can attain, they can approach the supreme destination. Tepi yanti param gatim. Then Krishna goes on to say in the next verse, so how much more so if the Rajarishis, the saintly kings, the brahmanas, the great devotees in society who are the natural leaders of society, how much more they should surrender to me. And then Krishna makes this point, anityam asukam lokam, that this world is temporary, it's full of misery. So the point of being in a higher social position is not to enjoy. If one is thinking like that, then naturally he will be an oppressor of others. If he's thinking, let me take up an important post of king, of brahmana, or even exalted devotee, prominent devotee, for my own enjoyment, then he will become an oppressor. It's a fact. But Krishna, he gives this warning. This material world is anityam asukam lokam. It is temporary, it is full of suffering. Therefore, what's the last line?
Imam Bhatsya Vajasvam.
Yes, Imam
Bhatsya
Vajasvam. So prapya, prapya. If you want something from this world, bhajasyaham, you just worship me. That's what is to be attained. That is what is to be attained. Prapya means gain. This is the only gain in this world, that you can worship me. In whatever position you may be in. This is the instruction that Lord Chaitanya accepted in his discussion with Ramananda Roy also. Ramananda Roy is making so many preliminary proposals as to what is the goal of life. And only when he gave that famous verse, Jnane Prayashamudapasya Namanja Eva, and Stane Istita, stay in your position, don't worry about that. Don't worry about moving up the social ladder. Stani stita, you can just stay in your position. But Shruti Gatan Manola here, you go on hearing about Krishna. And that's the point. That's the wonderful point. Stay in your position. Go on hearing. So you may be in a great position. And the only person available to hear from is in a socially inferior position to you. Doesn't matter. Go on hearing. That's the point. Because the only thing that's to really be attained in this world is the worship of the Lord. Nothing else matters. Yes?
You spoke on so-called Christianity. My heart is still, let's say, large groups of true Christians, and what can they reach according to the
maybe this is a question to ask Krishna Prabhu in his class. I'm not conversant about these subject matters, if there are any true Christians left. But someone else may be able. Yes?
That's a good question. Can you give me a little bit of a history, a bit of European history? So they switched to humanism was basically a frustration of the resurrection. Isn't that interesting to analyze that?
Yeah, there's a kind of scholarly view of European history, which is called the philosophy of history, and versions of this even appear in the philosophy of Hegel and like that. It's an explanation of historical evolution in those terms, that history is moving to the fulfillment of human ideals. And this is actually the appearance of the divine in this world, that human society will become righteous at the end, and everything the materialists want out of life, they'll get it at the end. So therefore, keep waving the flag, keep pushing, keep the revolution going, because at the end, we'll get what we want. And this is the result of compromising the teachings of Jesus Christ so that Christianity would be established among the masses. Popular appeal. You'll get what you want if you follow Jesus. Yes?
Problems in our society, social problems, should we work on them or should we work on this world surrender?
Yes. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Puritanaya sadhanam, vinashaya chuduskritam. He gives the reason for his descent in this world, to deliver the sadhus, the saintly persons, his devotees, from social oppression, from problems, from whatever you want to call it, and to annihilate the miscreants, to remove the miscreants. So the devotees of Krishna, they depend upon Krishna. Now Srila Prabhupada in a purport in the ninth canto has said that Krishna has taken birth or has entered the womb of this Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna is within this Krishna consciousness movement as his holy name in so many ways, as the deity. Krishna is here with us. So we must learn to depend upon him. And that means we have to advance in Krishna consciousness. We have to take this process of bhakti yoga very seriously, more seriously perhaps than we have been. So, a careful analysis of the social, if you want to call it that, the social ills of ISKCON can be traced back to deviation from the basic principles of bhakti yoga. Lack of Krishna consciousness. So I will stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.